The chaos roiling our nation is exploding even as the president escalates his inflammatory rhetoric. What brutal acts does provocative language at the highest level of our government encourage and even inspire? Helio Fred Garcia is a leading expert in crisis communication, who has now turned his expertise to an in-depth analysis of this crucial question. Fred's new book is Words on Fire, The Power of Incendiary Language and How to Confront It, and I am grateful it brings Fred to State of Belief Radio once again. Fred, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Welton.
We spent time together earlier this year on the show talking about some of the important themes you explore in this book. Now, Words on Fire is available for pre-order, and our nation itself is now literally on fire. How should we be thinking about what we see happening in America right now?
Welton, we are going through a very sad and difficult period in our civic life. I regret that the tone is set from the top. And we have a president who, from the time he contemplated running for office, has used language that divides, that frightens, that terrifies, and that creates the social conditions that lead to oppression up to and including acts of violence, including acts of mass violence and terrorism. And it's only in the last weeks that we've seen leaders begin to confront his language and his actions in sufficiently effective ways to call attention to the relationship between what he says and the predictable violence that ensues.
You talked a lot about lone wolf whistle as a fundamental concept. It's that you write about. Refresh our memories about that concept, please.
In the scholarship of national security and intelligence and law enforcement, there's a principle known as lone wolf terrorism. And that is people who commit acts of terrorism that are self-motivated, self-directed, they choose their targets themselves, and they equip themselves independently of any authority. What I explore in the book is how language is one of the triggers that converts people from being latent carriers of a grievance to being active participants in violence, including mass violence, including terrorism. And what triggers them is a kind of language that I call a lone wolf whistle, on the metaphor of dog whistle politics. And that is language that has a public meaning and also has a private meaning for some members of some groups or people with a particular point of view or grievance or ideology. And acts of random violence that are triggered by that language, I call lone wolf whistle violence. That includes destruction of property. That includes an insult, exclusion, oppression. But when it turns into acts of planned mass violence, such as the Tree of Life synagogue shooting, such as the El Paso attack on the Walmart, I call that lone wolf whistle terrorism. And what I do in the book is I document 12 forms of communication, 11 of which are language, one of which is imagery, that have historically preceded acts of violence. And one of the things that these forms of language do is it reduces empathy in society at large, and it makes the previously unthinkable the new normal. And I regret we have seen that happen over the last 5 years. And the principle speaker of that language has been private citizen, then candidate, now President Donald Trump, and those who serve as his supporters in public office. And whether it's senators or governors or candidates from office, they have been repeating his dehumanizing, demonizing, delegitimizing language. And the scholarship shows that it is precisely that kind of language that creates the social conditions in which people take it upon themselves to commit acts of violence. Now, what's fascinating in the national security and intelligence and law enforcement literature is those who commit such acts believe that they are engaging in some kind of noble or holy struggle. So, for example, the Tree of Life shooter said that he was protecting his people, which means white European-based people, from slaughter. The El Paso terrorist said he was protecting Texas from an invasion from Mexico. The mail bomber said that he was a soldier in the war between left and right. So what happens is a mindset shift that begins with observing a particular condition where the terrorist says, that's not right. They move to, that's not fair. They move to, it's your fault. And finally, you're evil, you're less than human, and I'm going to do something to eliminate you. That is a documented phenomenon that is published in the FBI intelligence bulletin. And we see that those who have been committing acts of violence in response to Trump's language have followed all of those four steps. Now, what's particularly disturbing is Donald Trump himself uses those frames in his communication. That's not right. That's not fair. It's your fault. You're less than human. You're evil. And people who are his supporters act on that. And some of them commit acts of violence up to and including acts of mass terrorism.
In the aftermath of yet another murder in broad daylight of an unarmed black man by a white law enforcement officer, does this legitimization of violence or bigotry or bias also impact individuals sworn to serve and protect?
I interpret what happened in Minneapolis as the modern equivalent of a lynching. It wasn't a single law enforcement officer who murdered George Floyd. It was four. Three actively involved in holding him down, and one who actively stood adjacent to that and did nothing to intervene. In the bad old days, lynching took place in the public square, and people came out to watch and cheer it. Today, it happens on smartphones. And what we have is a history of systemic racist oppression. We have seen the consequences of that just in COVID-19, where disproportionate effects have been on communities of color. And we see that also now in the attempt to blame people for the civic unrest. And I don't have any access into the hearts or souls of the four police officers who participated in that execution of a man in a public place. But that is a reflection of the lessening of empathy. That is a reflection of the normalization of violence. And the tone starts at the top. One of the people I quote in the book is the former FBI counterintelligence chief, Figliuzzi. And he says, it doesn't really matter whether Donald Trump is a white supremacist or only plays one on TV. The consequence is the same. And that is, he models behavior that is then countered and mirrored in other people. And that modeling of behavior at the top sets the tone of what is appropriate, what is acceptable, and what is normal.
So, Fred, what's the antidote to that kind of institutional violence?
The antidote is initially to recognize that it is taking place and to understand the cause and effect. One of the things I describe in the book is how easy it is for leaders to step over the line and use language that provokes violence. But responsible leaders, when called on that likely risk of violence or on the actual violence that ensues, take a step back and they stop the behavior that they had engaged in, and the best of them try to remedy the harm that has taken place. I document three such leaders, one of whom has been on state of belief. I document those leaders who went too far, who were called on it, who recognized that they had gone too far, who stopped what they were doing, who stepped back, and who tried to remedy it. What I provide in the book is a way for engaged citizens and civic leaders to recognize the patterns early, to have a vocabulary to hold leaders accountable for the consequences of their language, and to rally public support to put pressure on those leaders to stop what they are doing. But simply asking the president, "Aren't you concerned that your language is going to cause violence?" is not a sufficient way to do that. So I document, for example, a private citizen who called on such a leader and said, "Sir, if you do not immediately stop what you're doing, I will hold you responsible for the violence that ensues." We need clergy. We need political leaders. We need journalists. We need engaged citizens to have the tools to be able to call attention to the pattern when they see it and to have a sufficient vocabulary to get those who are committing such communication to recognize the consequence and to be held accountable for that consequence.
Help us, please, in this tinderbox moment for our nation. What else do we need to think about?
I think that Secretary Mattis's public statement yesterday is an inflection point in the public debate. And that is General Mattis, Secretary Mattis, who for years was Secretary of Defense, finally broke his silence. Now, I respect why he said initially that he would not criticize the sitting president as a Marine. That is part of the ethos. But this week went too far for even him. And he said publicly yesterday that in his time in the cabinet, he never saw any indication of the president attempting to unite the nation, but saw ample evidence daily of the president attempting to divide the nation. We need public figures such as General Mattis. We need people who have served in the cabinet, who have served in the White House, to come forward and tell their truth. And it is that telling of the truth that will change the public discussion and that will begin to hold the president finally accountable. Now, one of the things that I believe is what put General Mattis over the line was the escalation this week in both the president's rhetoric and the president's behavior. As I document in the book, because he was able to get away with his language from the very beginning of his attempt to run for office, he has escalated both the intensity and the severity of the language he uses. So, for example, he began conditionally. If Obama was not born in the United States, then he cannot be president. But then he was allowed to get away with it. So he escalated it from the conditional to the declarative. Nancy Pelosi supports human trafficking and the importation of illegal drugs to harm the nation. Now, that's abject nonsense, but that's not conditional. What we saw in the last 10 days was the actual incitement of violence. When the looting starts, the shooting starts. He retweeted a public official who is an employee of a government saying the only good Democrat is a dead Democrat. He called for dogs to be used to suppress protests. He finally called for active duty military. to mobilize against American citizens, even though the military is statutorily prohibited from engaging in law enforcement activities in the United States. He mobilized elements of the 82nd Airborne Division, who are equipped with bayonets and automatic rifles, and he's holding them in reserve in Maryland and Virginia to use against the American people. General Mattis saw that and said, that's enough. I can't sit by and allow that to happen. We need more public officials. We need more engaged citizens such as yourself. We need clergy, journalists, professors, academics, and ordinary citizens to mobilize to say, we will not allow you to corrupt the American value system in the way that you are.
Fred, you have a lifetime of experience in crisis communication management. When you look at a massive and massively deadly crisis, such as the COVID-19 pandemic, what are the failures that you've seen? And have those failures actually cost lives?
I believe they have. Winston Churchill famously said, you have to look at the facts because the facts look at you. And all of the public health authorities point to the reality that the initial steps by the president and his government to diminish the significance of the growing pandemic, to deny its existence, to call it a hoax, to say when there were 15 cases in the United States that it will only go down, it will go down to zero within a week, to say, I don't want that cruise ship to dock because if it does, then it will double the numbers of infected people in the United States. The president has yet to speak about the human toll. He talks about the numbers. Well, as Stalin said, a million fatalities is a statistic. A single fatality is a tragedy. We failed to look at the human consequence early enough. A study from Columbia University showed that if we had gone into self-quarantine 1 week earlier, more than 30,000 lives would have been saved. If we'd gone into confinement 2 weeks earlier, close to 50,000 lives would have been saved. The president's reaction was to discredit Columbia University, on whose faculty I'm proud to serve, and to diminish the significance of that study at all. It is a foundational principle of effective crisis response to understand the scope, the magnitude, the severity of the crisis, and to take steps to mitigate any future harm that that crisis caused. The president's denial of that significance, the president's diminishing of that significance, had human consequences, thousands of lives lost. Now, let me say, one of the things that is different since the president began using the language of violence 10 days ago is we no longer have all COVID death count all the time on the television. So he's managed to change the narrative, and he's been able to use the public unrest as a way to foment continued division. But one of the consequences of that is we're not talking about the death count. We're not talking about the death count from COVID. We're talking about the death count from the rioting in the streets. The president's signal failure was to not take the crisis seriously early enough. And even to this point, we do not have a whole of government response. We don't have a national testing strategy. We do not have a national strategy to deal with this at all. And as a result, governors have to cobble together coalitions just to buy medical and personal protective equipment against the federal government. So he is pitting governors against the federal government, even certain federal agencies against each other.
Yeah.
Is a failure of management. It's a failure of leadership. I believe it's a moral failing as well.
Yeah.
There are human consequences to leaders' behavior, and we need to take those consequences seriously.
I want to be a little intentionally redundant, because we've already talked about this, but it's really such an important event that I want us to go back to it. Because I want to take advantage of your expertise in communication in the face of crisis to ask about the bold statements that you've already mentioned, former Secretary of Defense General Mattis made this week about the ongoing subversion of our Constitution by this authoritarian administration. I guess we could call Mattis a whistleblower. And so I'd like to ask you to talk about the role of whistleblowers in bringing about or responding to crises.
One of the things we have found is very, very soon after the Secretary of Defense and the Chair of the Joint Chiefs used the vocabulary of battle space, speaking about American cities, and talking about dominating the battle space, an Undersecretary of Defense publicly resigned from an important position and said he was doing so because he could not tolerate that kind of behavior. When the president began to fire inspectors general of the Department of Health and Human Services, of the Department of Defense, of the intelligence community, that was a signal that the structures of accountability were being attacked. It is critically important for public servants to be able to live their values of protecting and serving the American people. And when they see the leadership of the government or the leadership of their own departments failing to do the same, violating their oath to protect and preserve the Constitution of the United States, it is upon them to do what they can to change the system, and if they can't, to publicly resign and to share why they're doing it. There is no evidence that Donald Trump has ever read the Constitution or understands the Constitution, and the Gold Star parent, Kazir Khan, who held up a copy of the Constitution at the Democratic National Convention, said, "Sir, if you need a copy, I can lend you mine." I'm honored that Mr. Khan is one of the endorsers of Words on Fire. He is a role model of how engaged citizens can hold leaders accountable. We need people in the government to do that. We need people in public life to do that. And we need people in private life to do that. Because failure to do that, silence is complicity. Failure to do that empowers the demagogues, the authoritarians, the malign leaders to continue to escalate their attempt to subvert civic society, civil order. And that is a predictable phenomenon, that if we had risen up a year ago, if we had risen up around the language of invasion, around the language of their animals, around the language of delegitimization of the news media, we might not be where we are today. One of the 12 forms of language that I identify as leading to violence is to delegitimize the keepers of objective information. Yeah. And we saw the president initially talk about fake news. When he was allowed to get away with that, he escalated it to enemy of the people. Then he escalated it to those who criticize me are committing treason. Well, what have we seen this week? We have seen law enforcement officers assault journalists and arrest journalists. And when being told, "I'm a journalist," they said, "I don't care." We've seen one journalist lose her eye being shot with a rubber bullet. We've seen other journalists be hit with flashbang grenades. The delegitimization and demonization of journalists is right out of the autocrat's playbook. We saw it coming. We could have raised a voice about it. We did not. As a result, we now see journalists as a target group, as an at-risk group. And we need to say no more. We can't allow that to happen.
For nearly 40 years, Helio Fred Garcia has helped leaders build trust, inspire loyalty, and lead effectively. He is a coach, counselor, teacher, writer, and speaker whose clients include some of the largest and best-known companies and organizations in the world. Fred is president of the crisis management firm Logos Consulting Group and executive director of the Logos Institute for Crisis Management and Executive Leadership. Fred's new book is titled Words on Fire, The Power of Incendiary Language and How to Confront It, coming June 30th and available for pre-order right now. Fred, thank you so much for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Walter.